This is the Texas Standard. I'm David Brown. Christopher Scott was sentenced to life in prison in 1997 for capital murder. He spent more than a dozen years behind bars before another man confessed to the crime, and Christopher was declared innocent. So what would you do with a second chance at freedom? Well, Chris teamed up with two other exonerated Texans to form a Dallas detective agency of sorts, one that's aimed at helping others who've been wrongfully convicted. Their story is now a documentary called True Conviction, and it's coming to PBS's Independent Lens. Chris Scott joins us now from Carrollton, Texas. Chris, thanks for taking time to speak with us on the Texas Standard.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Before we get into this remarkable new career, I have to ask you about what it's like now that you've been out of prison for close to a decade. I mean, do you feel completely free, or do you still sometimes wake up, you know, sort of surprised to be in your home? What is that like?
I think I'm pretty much declared I'm actually free. But, you know, every now and then you have those moments of where you wake up and you be like, thanking God just one more time because you're actually free. You can actually pinch yourself and feel it and wake up and, you know, you have your freedom again, where it was times in prison where you want to pinch yourself so hard to make it see that this is just a dream. It's not real. But when you pinch yourself and actually wake up, you're lying in a prison bed. So it's like a whole total 360 degree turn for me. But yes, I do love my freedom.
Knowing that you were not guilty of the crime for which you were convicted, did you have a sense of hope that somehow, some way, things would change, that the truth would be uncovered?
For a while, I didn't. I got discouraged at first because people was like, you have none DNA in your case. So it's no way we can prove that you actually didn't commit the crime. I was writing different organizations and they were saying the same thing. Dude, it's like a million and one chance for you to get out. But it was always said that when you feel like you want to give up, that's the time that don't give up. So I just kept thinking about what I'm going to do when I get out. And that just really made me have that kind of hope, because I always knew that one day soon, or one day, I'm going to get out of here, and the things that I'm working on in here, I'm going to be able to see it out.
Why did you decide to focus on helping others that had been wrongfully convicted? What was the thinking there?
Well, basically, every morning I woke up, I had to look at myself in the mirror. And every time I got up that morning, I said, man, our justice system screwed me. Soon as I step outside of my cell, it's another guy that looks like me is stressing the same thing. I'm falsely in prison for a crime I didn't commit. And, you know, you hear it and then you don't pay attention to it. But when you hear it so many times, other individuals that fit your description are saying the same thing. And you got to understand, like, something is wrong, because the system is not fair to African-American men. So I started talking to some guys in prison, like, look, whichever one of us get out first, we got to do something about this. And then when I got out, it was already a group of men doing that. It was other fellow exonerees that got out before me was already going to Austin and lobbying. And what I did, I just caught in.
Well, now, tell me a little bit about Johnny Lindsay and Stephen Phillips. How'd you meet up with them?
The day I was exonerated, as I'm walking outside of the court building, Stephen Phillips approached me with his wife, Connie Jean, and he told me, like, look, I got a place for you to stay. He said, man, just go there and get your thoughts together, and then you'll be okay. But when the first person that approached you was a white guy, and you felt like, you know, the white people are the ones that did this to me. So now it's a trust issue. Like, I don't even trust this guy. I don't even know him, why he's even offering me this kind of thing. But I realized he was an exoneree. He was out before me, so he was already going through that process. And I met Johnny Lindsay at an exoneree meeting. And, you know, we pretty much hit it off the top. But Johnny was working with another organization at first, and they had their own thing going on. So when I got out and started House Renewed Hope, Johnny saw that House of Renewed Hope was really the field that he really wanted to be in, mm-hmm. of trying to help free other innocent men and women.
So you get a lot of letters from prisoners, I would imagine. How do you decide which ones are real, which ones, you know, because you don't have all the time in the world. You have to figure out who you're going to help and who you can't right now. How do you make that determination?
Well, I have a P.O. box that I go to. It's in Coppell, Texas. I usually go every other Saturday, and each time I go there, I have no less than maybe 100 to 150 letters at a time.
Wow.
So you pretty much got to see your case inside of the case. Because, you know, a lot of cases, okay, have Brady violations, prosecutorial misconduct, mm-hmm. meaning things that was withheld could have got you acquitted.
Right.
You know, that happens a lot, but it's just certain things that you have a feel for. So once you get that feeling and you read between the lines, because at the end of the day, I'm 48 right now. I can tell you my story today. And when I'm 88, like 40 years from now, I'll be able to tell you my story without even waving it. So when you have a person that give you that much detail, mm-hmm. and it's repetitiously, every time you come in contact with this person, he's saying the same thing. You got to start trying to, you know, sometimes you got to believe the people.
So far, as you've been working these cases, has there been one that you've been able to sort of single out and say, nope, this person was definitely wrongly convicted and sort of brought it to, you know, a judge or a courtroom to have it reconsidered?
Yeah, actually, before this interview, that's where I was coming from, having that conversation with a judge today. And it looks pretty good for us. I really can't talk a lot about it, but yeah. It actually looks pretty good. The district attorney has reopened the case. The same attorney that exonerated me is the lawyer on this case. It's hard.
Wow.
It takes a lot of time and effort and hard work.
What do you think, if you had an opportunity to reach out to lawmakers, is there something that if you could talk to a lawmaker, you'd want to sort of put across?
If you have something that's holding prosecutors and judges accountable for a lot of the wrongdoings in the court building, then it's going to go over better. Because they know if they get a wrongful conviction in a court building, and they know they're the reason why that wrongful conviction happened, and they know they can get punished for it, the changes will start being made then. You can't get these people immunity. Because we know they're screwing up in our court buildings. You could take my life from me and then don't even have to worry about repercussions behind it. Okay, a slap on the wrist, we're going to give you 200 community hours and uh-huh. 2 days in jail. That's nothing.
Yeah.
You destroyed my life. And I guarantee you 100% wrongful conviction will stop if they feel like they can get time for it.
Christopher Scott works to help Texans across the state who are trying to help the wrongly convicted. He spent nearly a dozen years behind bars himself for a crime he did not commit. His story is part of a new documentary called True Conviction, airing on PBS's Independent Lens. Chris, thanks again for speaking with us on the Texas Standard.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.